Great. Thank you. Before we begin, could we have maybe an exorcism on this PowerPoint thing here? It seems already to be right.
And I swear, I did not
you
put
didn't.
The mojo on it.
Okay. All right.
I find PowerPoint evil, but I had nothing to do with
it. All right. My PowerPoint, and I regret once again using it, especially now after the previous episode there, but they have just very brief words, no paragraphs or anything, so if we have to go over that, it's going to be no major loss. And of course, I do have to go to our disclosure, and I'm speaking for myself and also for my partner, Rhonda Soricelli, and we have nothing to disclose. So with that out of the way, let us go on to our presentation here. The year is 1882. 28 years have passed since physician John Snow made epidemiological history by tracing the source of a cholera epidemic to a public water pump in the Soho district of London. In Berlin, famed microbiologist Robert Koch has just announced his discovery of the bacterium that causes tuberculosis, while a scientist in Hungary has just reported his discovery that the town's water supply is polluted, only to meet with harsh criticism for bringing the information to light. Epidemiology in general and germ theory in particular are rapidly gaining ascendancy as weapons in the assault on disease, but are also bringing those interested in public health into increasing conflict with others who are questioning the science and resenting the finger-pointing and resultant responsibility that such findings imply. In the same year of 1882, in a small Norwegian village, Thomas Stockman, a doctor on the board of the Kirsten Springs Health Spa, a progressive physician who sees himself as aligned with modern medical science, has just received the lab results for water samples he has just sent for analysis. As he has suspected, the samples show evidence of contamination. For Dr. Stockman, the path of action is clear. He must report his findings to the board and the town and reveal that the source of pollution is his father-in-law's tannery. He had suspected as much last spring when he noticed an unusual cluster of typhoid and gastric disturbances among visitors to the spa. And now he has proof to back up his suspicions. He is delighted with his epidemiological success. Every detective gets a lucky break once in his life, he says, and is no doubt that the information will be well received. He anticipates that he will be celebrated as a hero for guarding the public health and presenting a plan that will prevent further outbreaks of disease. What's more, this is almost a matter of divine justice. His original advice for building the spa was rejected, and now he must recommend a total, lengthy, expensive re-engineering of the springs as the only way of curing this ill. As we might expect, events do not unfold as Stockman anticipates, and he quickly becomes branded as an enemy of the very people he sought to help. Some of you may recognize this story. Stockman is the protagonist in Henrik Ibsen's play, An Enemy of the People, successfully adapted for more contemporary times by Arthur Miller in 1950. In using this story, we are following the trend of narrative ethics in which detailed stories, fictitious or otherwise, are seen as valuable ways of approaching ethical problems. Oops, should have gone. All right, here we go. let me just go back so you can, okay. That's An Enemy of the People, Henrik Ibsen, Arthur Miller, 1951. And that is Steve McQueen as Dr. Stockman in the 1978 film there, looking really grand, I think. So indeed, the play has been used as an educational vehicle in public health as well as ethics educational settings, because while the science may be dated, the underlying issues are not. Documenting problems is one thing. Determining appropriate, effective responses to them is potentially far more important. Consequently, our attention today is not to address instances of water pollution due to industrial activities, but to focus on responses to them. Responses to the problem, especially by whistleblowers, of which Dr. Stockman is an instructive example. Specifically, we shall use Stockman's story to examine what went wrong with his well-intentioned approach and to suggest how those informing about water pollution, as well as environmental pollution in general, could learn from his mistakes. The rules of The rules for responsible whistleblowing set forth in C.K. Gonzalez's How to Blow the Whistle and Still Have a Career Afterwards are especially instructive here, and Stockman has basically breaks them all. Rule number one states that the whistleblower should consider alternative explanations, and especially consider that he might be wrong. Indeed, after his accusations have stirred up public ire, Stockman is forced to admit such a possibility. In taking water samples from a specific area on one specific occasion, was his sampling representative? Did he ever think of the causes, such as food poisoning, as the explanation for the observed illnesses last spring? Pressed, he admits that there's always such a possibility, to which his accuser replies, "Well, then you have a perfect right to doubt the other way. You have a scientific right." Stockman seems to have been closed to the other considerations at the beginning of his investigation. He starts from what he wants to prove and gathers evidence accordingly. Gonzalez's rule, too, ask questions rather than lay charges, seems foreign to Stockman, who immediately makes accusations and takes a confrontational stance. Rule 3 states that the whistleblower should focus on factual matters, a point that is restated in Rule 4, which emphasizes separating personal and professional concerns. One issue here is the kind of documentation presented. We have already noted that Stockman's scientific method might be suspect. A further, more subjective consideration is how the evidence might be interpreted by those receiving it. Consider the response from Stockman's father-in-law, the owner of the tannery, when Stockman first mentions the lab results. Father-in-law, "Let me get this straight. There's some kind of, like, cockroaches in the water pipes? Well, some kind of little animals?" The father-in-law's daughter says, "Oh, they're bacteria, Father." Dr. Stockman, "Oh, and there'd be millions and millions of them." The father-in-law, "And nobody can see them but you? Is that it?" Dr. Stockman, "Yes, that's, well, of course, anyone with a micro," and then he realizes his explanation is not going to get through. Based upon the new germ theory, Stockman's evidence is controversial, especially in a small town setting, something he fails to take into account. Today, we may see parallels in the controversies over global warming, which we see now that economics are coming more into play. People are saying, well, maybe let's re-examine that evidence and so forth. The second issue, a big one for Stockman, is separating professional from personal. As Gonzalez states in his article, good faith whistleblowing is essential if it is to be successful and also not damage the whistleblower. And key to this issue is motivation. It is obvious that Stockman has many past irritants stoking the fires of his whistleblowing zeal. One is a sibling rivalry with his brother, Peter, who is the town mayor. "I will prove that I am right and you are wrong." Another is his desire to even old scores with the Health Institute board, who ignored his earlier advice. Well, now they're going to get it, both barrels, as well as the town politicians in general. "Let the baboons running the town call me a lunatic? Now they'd better watch out. Oh, how the mighty have fallen." He is driven by ego, as a friend points out, but Stockman lacks insight into his motives. Rule 5 states that the whistleblower should assess his goals. Stockman's stated goal is protecting the public health. His solution is that the town must build a waste disposal plant and reconstruct a brand new water system from the bottom up, a project that would shut down the springs for 2 years. We would suggest that Stockman needs to evaluate not only his goals, but also his way of defining the problem. For him, the problem is simply a question of public health and adherence to the so-called scientifically verified truth. He has sampled the water, sent it off to a lab, and the results indicate pollution that must be corrected. There is no need for further reflection. But the problem is not simply one of public health, as important as that value might be. It also has extensive economic and political dimensions, of which he chooses to be stubbornly ignorant, issues that often appear in whistleblowing scenarios. In this case, at stake is the livelihood of an entire town for which the springs and visitors they will attract are the main hope for jobs and prosperity. Here, there are two main values pitted against each other, health and prosperity. But does the conflict necessarily have to be a dilemma? For Stockman, it does. It is all or nothing. The question of compromise often arises in such cases. To what extent should compromises be made, if at all, in correcting public health hazards? To what extent can compromises that will bring about a workable solution be embraced? And what is a workable solution? These are questions Stockman refuses even to consider. And by defining the goal the way he does, he risks achieving none of it. Rule 6 states that the whistleblower should seek advice and listen to it. Stockman is given much advice from both opposition and friends, and it is surprisingly similar. Be reasonable. Be moderate. But he refuses to listen. His wife anxiously asks him to weigh his perceived duty to the community against his duty to his family, who will also suffer as a result of the public antagonism his actions have stirred up. And how do you go? And how about your duty towards your family, she asks, the people you're supposed to provide for? Stockman's wife raises a frequent concern of whistleblowers. While they may be willing to sacrifice themselves, do they have the right to sacrifice others? But Stockman will hear none of it. As he tells his sons, his manhood is at stake, and that trumps all. From now on, I'm going to teach you what a man is. And after all, his cause is a noble one, the truth. So far, we have been critiquing Stockman's approach as a whistleblower and have concluded that his actions are not likely to achieve his goal and will greatly complicate his life. Let us now shift our attention to the other side of the equation, the townspeople. Those in power, the Health Institute board members and town politicians, urge Stockman to be reasonable, in other words, to soften his charge and demands and come up with a more workable solution. They do not want embarrassing information brought to light, especially if it involves a costly fix. Likewise, Stockman's associates, fearing economic backlash, also urge reasonableness. When the doctor is unwilling to adopt its approach, they try to silence him. Does any of this sound familiar? Check, for instance, Jeffrey Wigand, the whistleblower on Big Tobacco, so well portrayed in the 1999 film The Insider. The townspeople, afraid of their livelihoods, refuse even to listen to Stockman. Eventually, Stockman willingly endures, even embraces, a whistleblower's martyrdom. The newspapers now reject his articles previously accepted for publication. He is fired from his job with the Health Institute, and a petition is circulated asking the people to boycott his services as a physician. Rocks are thrown through his window by children. Stockman, true to form, gathers them up as sacred relics of his martyrdom for the truth. His family is evicted from their home. His daughter is fired from her teaching position. The destructive determination of those fighting his message is amply displayed. But we must consider that Stockman, in many ways, has helped create this adversarial response by his steadfast resistance to any compromise. Reactions to the character of Stockman have been mixed. To some, he is a hero, holding the line on integrity, refusing to take the easy way out, standing steadfast for the public good, even when the public does not recognize what is in his best interest. Here, we characterize him a bit differently. As someone who has a worthy objective to preserve the health of the public, but fails to achieve any of it because of his antagonistic approach and his unwillingness to accept that achieving part of it is better than none. Identification of public health issues such as contaminated water sources is important. Also important is an effective response to them. We're moving towards a conclusion now. And Stockman, to paint him in broad terms, can be classified as a deontologist in a teleological world. He insists on the primacy of truth, the truth of his scientific data, questionable as though it may be, regardless of the havoc that it might wreak, while those around him are decidedly more fixed on the resultant havoc, an outcome at all costs to be avoided. His story allows us to vividly delineate both the risk to which a whistleblower may be subjected, as well as ways of avoiding them. It brings out the importance of defining a problem and goals from varied perspectives, listening to others, being insightful so that personal motives can be separated from professional, presenting findings in the form of questions rather than clarification. Questions requiring further clarification rather than accusations, and being able to consider alternative explanations even if these mean our original assessment of the situation was inconclusive or wrong. To conclude, we do not know if Stockman is later vindicated by an outbreak of disease stemming from the spa, a situation he would likely gleefully welcome despite the human suffering involved. And we do not know what, if any, steps Kirsten Springs took in response to Stockman's report. Perhaps this open-endedness, where we must evaluate actions without knowing the full outcome, is one of the play's strengths as a vehicle for investigating the intricacies involved in taking action against perceived breaches of clean water standards, as in this case, or environmental and public health violations in general. Yeah, thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Clark. We probably have time for one brief question, if anyone has anything burning. No? Mr. Nash?
I'm curious about your approach to narrative ethics and how you use the story of Dr. Stockman and what's the relationship between that story and the rules that you borrow for what a whistleblower should consider, because it seemed to me like the story is a kind of illustration on your view, and it serves a purpose in moral education. But it seemed also that you were treating the rules as more primary. The rules are primary and more inflexible, and the story is an illustration and case study, and we can evaluate the story in relationship to the rules. So the rules come first, right? Is that sort of it?
I was looking at the story and then trying to think what went wrong. This guy started out with the best of intentions, but what went wrong? And in your Cambodia situation, Dr. Stockman would say, look, if it means taking down the Cambodian government, let's just do that. I mean, whatever it takes to get this problem corrected. And then actually I came across the article later on. And then when I went through reading it and, you know, the various roles for whistleblowing and so forth, how to do it successfully, it occurred to me that Stockman did essentially everything wrong, at least if we're looking at them according to those rules.
Yeah.
And I just thought that it was instructive to approach it that way. For me, it provided a theoretical framework for examining what not to do when you're trying to be an effective whistleblower.
One of the rules, for example, says, you know, you're willing to set aside the personal and focus on the professional, right? In other words, sort of set aside the subjective and focus on the well-being of all, or, you know, something like that. And yet so many narrative ethicists want to emphasize the subjective, right? In this case, maybe the story of Stockman's wife or, you know, something like that, and consider what merit her advice and her story might have there. So anyway, I was just curious about how the relationship between the rules and the narrative.
Right. With the personal and the professional, I think a related point there is that we need to examine the problem from different perspectives, which is different from simply the personal.
Yeah.
The personal would be Stockman's sibling rivalry with his brother, for instance, and he lacks insight into that. But looking at it from how the economy of the town is going to be affected, that's a different perspective that he really doesn't consider. How his family is going to be affected, this is another perspective which he doesn't really consider. I would consider those as being different issues, actually.
Yeah.
Different perspectives rather than having insight into your own personal motivation in this.
Thank you very much.
I know we're short on time here, so thank you.
And